Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
You're one of those people that believes that science has the answer to all things, and through science, we will find those answers. Or are you one of those that goes by faith or has an open mind? Or are you a combination of all those things above? And I guess I'm more towards believing in something if it just seems like a possibility. And maybe I should go more on if there could be some evidence to support things. So this week I want to talk about something that I've been looking at for years. And now science is starting to back up some of these things that I've believed for a long time. Just took it on faith. And there was no way to prove it. But as we've gained technology, we've learned more and more. And the person I want to talk about, and I'd love to do an interview, but I haven't been able to contact him. His name is Dr. Melvin Morse. And I was just going around and looking through the internet, and I found a couple of near-death sites. And some of you maybe don't want to talk about death, but we're all going to face it. And the older I get, the less it bothers me. And I'm at a point in my life now where I certainly don't encourage it, but I know it's part of what goes on here. It's part of a natural thing that goes on, in my opinion. So I came across Dr. Melvin Morse, and I also came across a website called spiritualscientific.com. If you're interested in finding out more about near-death experiences, they've done a lot of research. They're not the only site out there. There's tons of sites. I'm amazed by how many well-known doctors, respected ones, who are investigating this, probably because they've heard it from their patients for so long, they finally thought there's got to be something to this. Now, there still are those that'll think you're a bit nutty if you talk about that, those in the medicine field and the scientific field. But there are more doctors, and I credit these people, that are willing to step up and say, you know, something's going on. His name is Dr. Melvin Morse. He's an associate professor in pediatrics at the University of Washington. He studied near-death experience in children, because he's a pediatrics doctor, for 15 years. He's written more than one book, Closer to the Light, Transformed by the Light, Parting Visions. His latest book is Where God Lives. He's primarily interested in learning how to use visions that surround death to heal grief. So he really, because he's a healer, he wants to help others. And that's the way I look at it. I present this stuff because maybe it's going to help somebody if you're dealing with grief, or just all of us who have to face what's on the other side. And, you know, our religion teaches us, that those of you that have a religious belief, that, you know, you will find a better place. But I think there are even those that have a strong faith in a religion still have doubts. And that's why they always talk about it, and they always try to point to proof. I mean, I have a lot of friends that will say, see, look at this is in the Bible, and we're finding out scientists are... So we all have maybe some doubt. And there's nothing wrong with having a little doubt, regardless of what we believe. So as I'm looking through more of Dr. Melvin Morse, I'm finding that he's quite a unique individual. But something that really caught my interest, it says for more than, this is on a website I'm taking this off of, neardeath.com is the name where I found this. And then there's another one that he's connected to, spiritualscientific.com. It says for more than 15 years, Dr. Melvin Morse, a practicing pediatrician and renowned researcher, has studied near-death experiences on hundreds, not just a few, hundreds of children. His bestsellers, Closer to the Light and Transformed by the Light, convinced millions that there is indeed something that lies beyond bodily death. And NDEs profoundly transform people's lives for the better. Now, Morse continues his compelling scientific probe into the mysteries of life and death, offering a bold and provocative new theory on what NDEs reveal about mind-body interactions, human memory, and the part of the brain that literally communicates with God. Now, some have said there are those within the scientific industry that have said that we are just experiencing, when we have these NDEs or when we have these out-of-body, that it's just a lack of oxygen to the brain, and it's just, you know, it's not real. And I beg to differ with that. I've had too many of my own experiences that I know are real. Dr. Morse argues that the study of NDEs provides a starting point, not the, all the answers, starting point for understanding the mysterious link between our brains and the universe. Through sound scientific studies have already identified the existence of the God spot, as they call it, the right temporal lobe of the brain. Morse takes this concept several steps further, building on the controversial theory that memory may actually be stored outside the brain. Outside the brain. What does that mean? He suggests that the right temporal lobe acts as not as a computer for our individual minds, but as a transmitter and receiver of the universal mind. I find it, to me, that's like really cool, hearing that from someone that is considered a practitioner of medicine and a scientist. For someone to say that, because I've heard that a long, long time ago, that the brain is actually a receiver and a transmitter, and it picks up on thoughts that come from where? Well, it has to come from something, every thought. Somebody once termed it the river of thought, and I've also heard universal mind. And it says, according to this article, that we can actually learn to stimulate this part of our brain in a number of ways besides near death or active dying. You don't have to be dying in order to tap into this. You don't have to have a near-death experience. This is why people talk about out-of-body experiences. The challenge, he says, is to learn how to integrate the rational left and spiritual right side of our brains. Morse attempts to answer the most important questions from the field of near-death studies based on a single premise, that most paranormal perceptions take place through the God spot's link to a universal memory bank from which we can receive and access information, and with which we can interact to alter reality in a physical way. Whew. When I read that, it just, these are all things that I felt in my heart were true. I read a book years ago. Now, there's been some people that have pioneered, but the name of the book was from a Toronto psychologist. I can't think of his name. Hypnotherapist. And it was called Life Between Life. That, to me, was a huge wake-up call. And according to what I remember of the book, the individual who wrote it, this doctor, he had researched at least 100 of his patients, and with their permission, through hypnotherapy, they allowed him to share their stories within this book. And the stories, he would take people back, and they would go back to the very earliest time in their life. And by mistake, he kept going back one time, and they started to recall what took place between lives. And I found that extremely interesting. And scientific as well. And I'm normally not the scientific guy. My brother is. But he even went back to their previous lifetimes. And there was a story that stood out. I believe it was in his book, but I could be wrong on this. About how he was trying to help a man who had no evidence of physical ailment, but yet he had all this pain in his knee. And they tried everything. And finally they did some hypnotherapy. And what he did is he took him back to a previous lifetime. I believe that was around the Civil War time or something, where he was in a battle and his knee got blown off. And the memory of this pain was still there. And so when they relived that moment and he let it go, the patient, the pain went away and it never came back again. So do you believe that's possible? Because I sure do. And I've had some people I've talked to that have kind of had interactions with that. And I know I've had my own feelings of a previous lifetime. And I can't remember the pain of being run through like others have told me that I got run through with a bayonet. It doesn't bother me. I think I'm pretty much at peace with all of it. It is what it is. I don't care about it so much anymore. But I think there are those of us that hang on to it. What's cool about this book, Life Between Life, and other books that have been written, and there's a lot of research out there. I'm beginning to see that on the internet. A lot of people taking very seriously. Now, we don't hear about these people unless you seek it out. And I'd like to talk to them. I've actually sent out some emails, but you know, I haven't heard back. So unless somebody gets back with me, I won't be able to interview them. If you know of somebody that you think would be interested in talking to me, I'd love to hear about that. Feel free to send me an email or post something in my shout box, because I'm always trying to seek that out. So what's cool about the book Life Between Life, which I read years ago, I read it back in the 80s, but it made me realize that maybe there was some evidence back then, and more researchers have done this, and there's people like this doctor that I'm talking about right now, Dr. Melvin Morse, are saying a very similar thing. And they haven't just researched one patient. It's been many. But Life Between Life stated that when we pass away, and I'll kind of give you the brief synopsis of what I remember of this book. We pass away, we're usually met by loved ones. Sometimes it's a religious figure. And they help guide us, or maybe it's guides, and they help guide us towards the light and towards, you know. And we have this thing called a life review. And in just an instant, it happens like simultaneously. We see all these different, everything we did in our life that affected others emotionally, whether it was good or bad. And we feel it. We feel what the other person felt. So this makes you want to live a better life when you hear about that, because you think, wow, how many times have I done that to somebody without even realizing, you know, maybe I hurt them. So it started me to start, I don't know, becoming a better person. Not just because I was worried about that. It's just because I wanted to be. The more I delved into this, what I call spiritual truth, the better being you become, because you start filling your heart with love. And then the love just takes over and you start expanding on it. That's how I've become a better person, because I was a typical person at some point in my life, where I was selfish. I was out for me. I didn't always think of others first. I had a short, you know, I had a temper. I was impatient, a short fuse, my ego, all that crap. And I've learned to let go of so much of it. And the more I tap into love, I don't care about any. I don't have to be first in line. I would much rather see someone else go. You know, it's just, to me, the absence of love is what makes us behave that way, my opinion. And the more we start tapping into it, this universal love that's out there, call it what you want, the more it just becomes natural to start considering others' feelings and thoughts. That doesn't mean you have to put yourself out. So anyway, Life Between Life talks about having this experience, this moment after you've passed away, where you see and feel everything that you did in this lifetime. And what a great teacher that is. And it's, you know, it's not, I don't think it's ever done to hurt you. It's done to make you realize. And then, from what I understand, you'll see your loved ones. And depending on what you believe, you'll experience that for a while. Maybe you'll see Jesus. Maybe you'll be next to God. Maybe you'll see angels, whatever. But eventually, you're going to sit down with anywhere from one to three. And again, this is based on what I've read in that book and other books. You're going to sit down with one to three, I wouldn't call them judges, but those that are there to help you. Very gently look at what you did and your last lifetime, and help you plan for your next one. And you're always wanting to grow. And you may come down here and not necessarily do that. You may spend a lifetime of being confused or lost. And we're going to get into that, why that is, in just a little bit here, based on some other things that I've heard and read. And maybe you believe these and maybe you don't. But they make a lot of sense to me. So after you've met with them and you plan out your next lifetime, and the next lifetime, I'm going to try to learn forgiveness because I just can't seem to get that this last first few hundred times around. Which you think you would, right? You would think you'd gain it at some point along there. It shouldn't take that many times. And why do we even do this to begin with? You know, God sent us down here because we need to learn to become better beings. But why even go through that to begin with? I always ask that. Why? What's the purpose? And to me, the only answer that makes sense, and I'm not trying to, you know, you have your own beliefs. Don't necessarily cling on to mine. Find out your own answers if that's what you're seeking. To me, what only makes sense is because we want to. We want to experience what it's like to be in a physical body. To me, that's the best answer. Not this, well, you need to go down there and get it again over and over, and God will accept you. God already does accept me, as far as I'm concerned. This being, this loving being that I think that is the universal mind, or whatever you want to call it, I can't define it. We are it. It is us. So why would it have this separation? So what we experience, it is experience, and that's the whole purpose of existing. So you can experience things in all different levels and forms and continue to evolve and move. Because if you don't evolve, I almost wonder if you cease to exist. So we almost need this. Again, this is just what I've kind of picked up, and everybody's got their own opinion on it. And who's really to say who's right until we get there, right? So the people that have been there and back kind of have they remember. So when we prepare to go in our next lifetime, according to this book, and we may live many, 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 many lifetimes, and we may choose to be a person of the opposite sex. If we're a male energy, then we may tend to follow that, but sometimes we may be a woman. Now, some of you might say, okay, now that's it right there. If you ever saw the movie Defending Your Life, it's pretty good. It's a pretty good explanation, I think, of what really does go on. They do it in a humorous way, but there's a scene where this big, burly construction guy, or whatever he is, he's reviewing his previous lifetimes, and one of them, he's a little ballerina girl, and he's going, what the hell? Because he couldn't see himself as being that. And I think we are energy, first and foremost. And energy can form into any kind of shape, you know. And some people believe that we've been split. We are this duality. This is why we're searching for a soulmate. And I'm not sure 100% on this. But we split the energies into male and female so that we can experience differently. So this is why we have this desire to meet this soulmate, because there's something just like us that is experiencing it, in my case, as a female. And my soulmate is experiencing, you know, as it wants to, it wonders what it's like for that male counterpart that's out there. To me, that makes some sense too, that maybe it's why we have this great desire to meet someone and think it's our soulmate. And I've met my soulmate. Well, if you trust the research on reincarnation and life between life, we really don't meet our soulmate. And I mean, I don't want to change your way of thinking. If you believe in happily ever after, that's good. That's a great dream. Stick with it. For all I know, you might be right. But I believe that we share these temporary lives and we have to learn to let go. And it's in a way that seems really sad. Because you think, well, I'm not going to see them again. Yeah, you will. We always, we are just a thought away from seeing anybody we want, in my opinion. And they can come visit us in our dreams. You're much more free to visit somebody when you're in a state of spirit than you are in a physical body. I got to hop in my car, and I don't even know where to drive to see my dead mother or father. How far do I got to drive? When I think about them, they're around me. And they leave little signs and little clues many times. And sometimes, if you're lucky, you might get a glimpse of them. And if you explore that more, then maybe you'll start to see them on a regular basis. But the easiest way for them to come visit us is in our dreams, because our brain is not activated. And this thing we think that controls us lets go. And so these things can kind of meet us halfway, where we now can have interaction with them on a spirit level. I truly believe that because I've had those kind of those twice in my life, maybe more than twice, but two times for sure, one with my mom and one with my dad. I've had those kind of experiences, and many, many others have had them. So are we all just making it up? Is it all just part of our imagination? I mean, it could be. It certainly could be, right? So eventually, getting back to life between life, we start to plan our next lifetime, and I've heard more than one that's done research, and other actually entities have said this, that if you rush into it, you're going to have a life of chaos. So it's like anything. If you don't plan out your, when you're here on the physical earth, if you don't plan your retirement or plan your future and you just rush headlong into life, what are you going to have? Probably chaos. So if you don't stop and think about it, so this maybe explains why some people come here and they're just totally, I don't understand why they're so messed up. And that explains it to me a little bit. So eventually we go on to live our life and we pick the people we want to be with, which to some of you sounds maybe like, really? Come on. I thought that was all designed by a higher power. If the higher power allows us to be, wouldn't it make sense that we pick and choose? Again, I'm not trying to convince you. You believe whatever you want. But that makes sense to me. We have to experience these things for ourselves. And how can we not if we're not given complete freedom? So I believe I picked my parents. Maybe I've shared time with them before. And I came down here to experience what it was going to be like. And I really chose, I think, two really cool people. Well, you know, spirits. They both taught me a lot as far as what I see values of honesty, values of not being afraid to work a little harder, integrity. You know, my dad wasn't perfect, but he had a lot of good values that he grew up in that generation. You know, now it seems like we're losing a lot of that. And I want to be open to all possibilities. And I see, you know, how families are raising their kids nowadays, allowing them to have a lot of freedom, which is good. But also, there has to be some guidelines, I would think. But I'm not an expert on it. I knew I grew up with guidelines and I hated them. But many of those guidelines were very good guidelines. And I'm glad I grew up with them. And it made me see things pretty clearly. And when we get out of having respect for the ones that have the experience in our society, which is something we do here a lot, maybe not in every culture, but over here, we don't have the respect for these people that have a lot of experience. It seems like everything is focused on youth nowadays, and youth has the least amount of experience. Granted, some of the youth today are some of the most enlightened beings because I think they're born with more awareness nowadays. So we need to listen to them, but also we also need to respect those that have something, that have lived with that integrity and hear what they have to say. That's my opinion. That's the way I treat it. You don't have to respect me. I don't expect you to. Getting back to what happens and why there are people here, there's something I wanted to bring up, which maybe explains it. I don't know if I guess I can buy into it a little bit. I read this book years ago called Messages from Michael. Actually, it was a series of books. And it was, again, you know, back in the 80s, maybe the middle 80s is when I started reading that. There weren't a lot of, I mean, there's been some books that have come and gone since the 60s, 70s, and so forth. And each one seemed to expand a little more awareness. And you wonder, is this all being made up? Well, Messages from Michael, which you can still find out there, it was like the primer, one of the beginners for me. And I've changed my way of looking at things a little bit, but a lot of what was said there made a lot of sense to me. In Messages from Michael, they talk about soul levels. And this is kind of where the topic we're winding up on now. And I was reading that on one of those near-death sites. The research they did talked about soul levels. And that's what kind of got me on this topic. And again, there's a couple of sites. There's tons of sites. NDERF, NDERF.com, Spiritual Scientific, if you want to take a scientific approach. And why not? I'm glad to see people are doing that. And it's not just, there's a lot of science out there with, I think, without spirituality. Well, this is it. We die, it's over, and that's science. And I think you got to combine the two. That's where, you know, there's a show called Ancient Aliens. And I watch that sometimes, and they say that, you know, we were impacted by alien beings. But they don't take the spiritual end of it. It's all just very scientific and dry. You know, so-and-so saw this in the Bible. Well, maybe it was a spiritual being, too. It doesn't always have to be. They kind of take a stretch. Everything is explained by aliens. And I think we've had alien interaction in the past. It seems pretty obvious. Some of it was here to help us. Some of it maybe not. But also we've had spiritual intervention in the past, and we've had these great masters come forward and try to move us along in our understanding, because we wanted that. So, spirit, the way I understand this soul level is kind of, it makes sense, I guess. I mean, see what you think of it, but we are these beings of energy that have been around for who knows how long. I think we all have been around for who knows. None of us are more advanced than anybody else. But we're more advanced in the physical experience because we've lived here longer. Maybe some are just finally coming into this now, going, I want to try that. I've been over here doing all this stuff. I'm going to go try a physical experience on planet Earth. And so maybe there's some of us that have been coming here thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years, and experienced life here. And we've decided, you know, you start to evolve as far as your experience level on this plane. So they use a term called baby souls or infant souls in messages from Michael. The ones that are here for the first time. And it's, I think about it like, you know, you're a little baby and you experience, what's it like? You know, everything's just, you're overwhelmed. And you're excited too, but you're overwhelmed because you don't even know what this stuff is. And then they have like young souls is another term they use. And those are souls that have been here before, but they still have a lot of maturing to do. And another level is mature souls. And these are souls that have been around the block a lot, and they're starting to understand things. And then eventually I think are the old souls. And the old souls is which every one of us thinks we are, but we're not. I don't know if I'm an old soul. I know I'm probably at least a mature soul. But the old souls, according to what they said, are pretty detached from a lot of things, which is the way I feel sometimes. But they have a greater awareness, and they're more calm, and their life is probably planned out better, and they're ready to move on. They've been here enough times. It's like, okay, I've learned what I wanted to learn. I'm ready to go, and I don't feel the need to keep coming back. So that, to me, rings true. And there's books out there you can read, and there's websites you can research if you're really interested. To me, when I heard that, at first it scared me because I had a religious belief, a Lutheran belief that, you know, we need to believe in God in order to go to heaven. And then I kind of thought, well, there is reincarnation. When I was a kid, I even thought, there's reincarnation. God sends us back again and again till we get it right so we can move back into his kingdom. And now, you know, it's morphed even beyond that. And again, this is my belief, and you don't have to sacrifice a goat or a chicken or anything. I don't want you to follow me. Maybe just spark something that you've always kind of felt inside you, and you want to pursue this. And obviously with the internet today, boy, isn't that great. You can find anything you want. The thing is, like I've stated before, it's hard to find what's the truth. Well, when these people do scientific research, and many of them, these doctors, I'm sure they see this all the time. They hear these stories that are just hard to pass up because people can look down on their body when they're having a near death, and they can describe the procedure while they're under or dead, clinically dead, and tell the doctor what happened. And there's no way they should know that. There's absolutely no way that they should know that. Some people have described being outside the hospital and seeing a shoe on a ledge. And when the doctors and nurses went and looked, sure enough, my own father had an experience where, and I didn't hear about this till a few years back from my brother, who heard about it from our aunt, and she just brought it up casually. But my dad, when he passed away, it was 1984, and I was in Mississippi, and I tried to get some time off, and they said, you know, my mom said, he's not going to live much longer. Try to get up here as quickly as you can. He was in Madison Hospital in Wisconsin. And so you know, I just started working this job. I wasn't that long into it that I was working this job. And they said, well, you don't have any vacation, but we'll give you some. You can go see your dad. And I, at the time, I thought I had more time, you know. But I said, he's getting really bad. I got to go up there. And they said, okay, well, how about later this week? Can you wait till later this week? So I left at the end of the week, and I got up to Madison. It was like a Friday. And I got to see him the day before he died. And again, you know, when we look back on this now, and even a number of years ago, it's not a big deal, because my dad in spirit would have seen me, and he would have heard my thoughts, and he would have felt my emotions. But in the physical, you're thinking, oh, I got to get there. And even if you don't always get there, it's not the end of the world. But I'm glad I got there. And I got to see him, and that itself was a weird event, because he came out of like a coma state, or a drug-induced state, I should say, not a coma state, but a drug. He was just talking gibberish the whole time because he was on morphine. He was high as a kite. And as I was leaving the room with my brother, my other brother, Mike, my half-brother, I said, Dad, we got to go now, and we'll see you tomorrow. And he snapped out of this stage of just talking gibberish, and he looked right at us, and he said, no, don't go. Don't go. I want you to stay. And that... I mean, how do you explain that? I mean, is that possible? And then so my mom walks back in the room. She says, what are you guys doing? I said, Dad just said he wants us to stay. And she goes, no way. He is so drugged out of it, he can't talk to you. You're hearing things. Come on. And so she leaves the room, and I'm getting ready to leave again with my brother and half-brother Mike. And I go, okay, she's probably right. Dad, we'll see you. We'll see you tomorrow. And he's talking gibberish again, and he stops, and he looks at us, and he says, okay. And he goes back to gibberish. Now, something unique is going on there. Well, I found out from my brother a few years back, the day before I got up there, or maybe it was a couple days before that, my aunt, Juanita, I believe it was Aunt Juanita, and another aunt got there, and they saw him in the hospital, and he didn't look good, and he knew he didn't have much time, and they knew it, you know. And they didn't want to be around what they knew was coming. I'm sure it was hard for them to accept. And you can only stay in the hospital for so long. And so they decided to go outside and get some fresh air. And when they did, that's when they talked about my dad. His name is Gene. Well, it doesn't look like Gene's going to do well and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you don't express that to the patient when they're laying in the bed, probably. So you talk about your concerns away from there. So they're outside, totally away from his room. He's up, I'm sure he's up a few floors, you know. This is a big hospital. And they go back in, and when they walk in there, he's no longer in a drug state. He is back to being where they can, you know, he's cohesive. And he tells them, I heard you guys talking about me. And they said, what do you mean? You guys were outside, he said, you guys were outside talking about me, weren't you? And they said, yeah, we were. How did you hear us? He said, I was sitting on the flagpole, and I heard what you said. Now, he wasn't angry with them for what they said. He was just telling them, I heard you guys talking about me. And so it proved to me, with my own father, that we can leave our body, and who knows what else we can do. As far as the level of souls, if we all have a level of experience coming here, which makes sense, we learn things in life, right? We become more advanced. That's a possibility. And if you're listening to this right now, and you have an open mind, then I would just say, again, my opinion, you're not a young soul. You're not a baby soul. You're not an infant. To be aware of these things, I would say you have to be a more of a mature being in understanding. So I don't know how you see yourself, but it's good to have you along. Thanks for listening. Music.
music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.